Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 110. We are 90 episodes from 200. So it's 18th of January 2021.
250 days to Christmas.
Yes. In a few months, it's going to be spring. Now, it's actually absolutely brilliant winter weather in Helsinki, but that's a separate discussion. Now, which reminded me, I'm going to go and grab a coffee. So you guys can do the intros. So. And there he goes. There we go. I can still hear you. Come on. So, my name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the OneDrive SharePoint Engineering. And with me as a co-host is Valdek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Mostikas. I am cloud developer advocate at Microsoft. And today with us, except the person that left, is
we have
a guest from Sweden, MVP, father of PNP PowerShell. Erwin van Hoonen.
Erwin. Well, hi.
Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome. Do you want to do a quick intro? Who are you?
Okay. Well, they did the bigger part.
Other than just slightly your background of things. So, what do you actually do?
I'm a lead architect at Valo Intranet. So that's where I work. That's my day job. And then my evening job is that I do PowerShell and work with you guys on PNP.
How did you end up doing that?
How did I end up in PNP?
In 2012.
Back in when I came back from the Second World War.
It was 2012. Actually, it was 2012 that I met Vesa for the first time.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
We didn't technically met because I was delivering remotely.
Our baby was
about to born, and I declined to fly to Redmond.
Exactly. But that's how I met. I was following a training at the campus in Redmond, and Vesa dealt in remotely. So that's how I got in touch with Vesa, and we're moving forward a couple of years later, 2014, and I wrote this little PowerShell module that I thought was actually useful for the rest of the world. That was my hope, at least. And I proposed it to Vesa to be part of what it was called. It was Office AMS or no?
Yes. Chef? Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Office AMS. Office application samples. Office AMS.
Yeah. So that was called at the time. It was still located on what was that site
Complex.
Called? Codeplex, exactly. So I was still hosted on Codeplex, and I got in touch with Vesa and said, hey, I have this, would this be interesting? And Vesa liked it, and it became part of that open source project, and the rest is history. That grew into PNP, and now it's incredibly many times used every single day. So yeah.
So everybody, well, I think in the certain, let's say, industry section and in certain areas, people are highly aware of the BNP PowerShell and they use it and all of that, but how much is it actually used? Obviously I know that, but I'm just Erwin,
day,
you can explain the numbers
per day. It sometimes a bit less, sometimes a bit more, but on average 60 million times
per day.
60, yeah. 60 million commandlets are being executed per day. Yeah.
Wow.
That's
so what are the top things, or what are the, let's say, most common things people would use PNP PowerShell for?
Why would you use PNP PowerShell? Yes, indeed.
Why would you use PNP PowerShell? Okay, so I would say the same reason as why I developed it. When I was a developer working, or as a consultant, just like Vesa, I'm a recovering consultant.
Who isn't, huh?
Exactly, who isn't? That will stick with you for years and probably will never get really out of your system. But when I was a consultant, there were these little tasks that I had to do, little things that I wanted to change for a customer or something, or you had to go through a site and change some list items or whatever. And I always ended up writing a console application for that using CSAM. And while that works, that console application I reused it a lot, and you might have done the same thing. It started to grow with options and parameters you could send into that console application until you realized that it didn't work anymore as you wanted, and you rewrote it. And you were still coding all the time in C# and Visual Studio. And That's basically the reason PowerShell came. Sorry, I got very confused. Somehow my Alexa woke up for some reason. I said a magic word here.
PowerShell. Alexa, PowerShell.
Exactly. But that's typically the user's model for PowerShell. Simple scripts and or even complex scripts if you want to, but without you needing to use C# code. And if you're not a developer and you don't dare to touch C#, or you find C# and C# scary,
or IDE, the development environments,
exactly. Then PowerShell is a very good alternative.
Yeah,
and it's very easy to write, very simple, well supported, lots of knowledge out there. So and it runs basically everywhere.
And can you kind of relate it on that one? I'm pushing you to the direction, but can you kind of think through what was the breaking point of the kind of a killer application within the BMP PowerShell comparing to the SharePoint Online PowerShell? What was the thing that people started actually using BMP PowerShell for automating operations?
Right. The fact that you can run it everywhere, the fact you can run it on your own desktop, the server-side PowerShell that was available with SharePoint only ran on a server. You have to physically connect with a remote desktop or something like that, or a remote PowerShell session, you could use that. But you had to do some tricks or go to a server to execute the PowerShell on the server. That didn't exist for SharePoint Online, and it will never come because that's physically, technically not possible to actually log into the server in the cloud and do things there. So that is the killer feature of BMP PowerShell, is that you can, wherever you are, as long as you have an internet connection, connect to your online environment and do things.
I would say even more specifically, you can also connect to the site level. So SharePoint Online PowerShell is for the administrative operations, but then the BMP PowerShell gives you access on the site and site collection and content, correct, which is really the magical piece. So
yes, you have access to basically every artifact in your site collection.
And nowadays, it started as a SharePoint PowerShell, but it's not just about SharePoint anymore, right?
No, we expanded. So we have support for Teams currently in BMP PowerShell, and we have support for Microsoft Planner. So those are the two areas that we are venturing off in already, or we did already that's there already. And whatever comes to mind in the future. And then sometimes I get the questions, but there are already commandlets for Teams. Why PowerShell? Well, yes, it's a convenience. You could consider installing a separate package for Teams. I mean, the work to install that package is not that much. It's a simple command to execute and you have it installed. But you already have BMP PowerShell. It's already running. If you want to integrate it nicely in one script with one way of connecting is the key thing with all these PowerShell libraries, that you always have to connect to something and then do something. And if you already use BMP PowerShell to do things at site level, but you will also want to do something with Teams, you have a single connection to share, instead of having connecting here, connecting there, connecting here, connecting there, those kind of things.
But what about then? And that makes perfect sense. There's actually two follow-up questions over there, putting you on a spot here. So first of all, obviously the connectivity and connection. I think that's one of the things which in the BMP PowerShell has been really thought through. Rather than SharePoint Online PowerShell always requires an interactive logging, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually support an authentication options. It doesn't support security and secret and certificates and all of that. What about BMP PowerShell? What are the different options for that?
Well, we support, we have the interactive way of logging in. So
in the MFA level, right?
MFA, so there's
what is an MFA, by the way? Multi-factor authentication.
Multi-factor authentication. So you have MFA, multi-factor authentication set up, you know, where you log in and then you have to confirm with either with an SMS code that you get or with the authenticator app that you use. So when you have that kind of authentication set up, we support the ability to log in with a web login. So basically, we pop up a browser for you. You authenticate there. You confirm your with a code, and then you're authenticated. That's one way of logging in. The other way is with the credential flow. Basically, it's username, password, but that requires an app registration to be present in your Azure AD. And then we have basically you can provide your own one. So you can build. You go to the Azure AD. You create a new app there. App registration. I find the word a bit the terminology a bit confusing at times, because when you say app, people immediately think functionality, code, things happening. There's nothing there. It's a registration. But you can provide your own app registration and then username, password, and authenticate through that. So it's delegate access. So all the things you do are happening under the identity of you logging in. You could also use the pre-registered multi-tenant app that we as PNP provide, the PNP management shell. For instance, the Office CLI has that option too. Office CLI. I said Office CLI? CLI for Microsoft 365. Yes. Office CLI. I said that. Okay. There is no Office CLI.
At least for now. Never know.
Who knows? Indeed. So that's the username password combination in combination with a client ID. Then we have certificate based authentication to do the security, but that's an app only access basically. So then it's the app acting as an identity towards the server, towards your environment. And then we have the if I want to call it legacy authentication with client, the client secrets that you register on your tenant, your SharePoint tenant with app inf app rec new combination, but that's a very technical story.
So is there any auth type that you don't support?
That's a very good question. Is there any auth on behalf of
somebody else?
Yeah.
So if you had an app and you would run PowerShell in function, and then you have an API connecting to your function that would be running PowerShell, and then you cannot do on behalf of that busy pass on the identity. Okay.
Yeah. But coming back on that one, which you said, you can then use kind of a typical scenario obviously right now is that people want to use this PowerShell in Azure Functions to automate operations. And this is the different authentication models which are supported by PNP PowerShell does enable that. So you can, in non-interactive way, sign in using the application registration of that.
Correct.
Now, related all of this, so obviously one of the areas where we as a Microsoft are investing heavily is the Microsoft Graph. And Microsoft Graph has its own PowerShell. So I'm putting you on a spot here. The Graph PowerShell is relatively new, and PNP PowerShell has existed already 5 years, and it's being used by 30,000 tenants in every single month or something
in
like that.
In that range, yeah.
But now that we have the PNP, now that we have the Graph PowerShell, how do you see these two things? Is it complementary? Is it the future direction of these things?
Right. So I think there's a fundamental difference between the two libraries in their approach. From PNP PowerShell, we're what we call scenario-based, is that basically a single command can do multiple things behind the scenes, whereas the graph is API-based, if I want to. The graph commandlets are API-based. They're basically a direct reflection of the graph API.
Because it's auto-generated from the API. Right?
Yeah. So basically, every endpoint has its corresponding commandlet, and everything you can send to the endpoint are then parameters on that commandlet. But that requires you to understand, first of all, the Graph API. You need to know what is available. Now, they have a nice Graph Explorer to help you to figure out where things are. But still, it's a direct reflection where PNP PowerShell is doing a lot of the things. Take, for instance, adding a list item. We do a lot of processing behind the scenes. If we add a list item, we check if the data you're inputting is valid before we actually create the item. We maybe rewrite the data in a better way, because actually the API requires the data in a different format than you're providing it. So those kind of things we do behind PNP PowerShell. You could obviously do the same thing with the graph, but you will have to write a bit more complex script then, where you do all that handling yourself. So that's a fundamental difference between the two. So are they complementary? Yeah, maybe at times where we have no support for certain endpoints in the graph, or you want to do certain things that we don't do in PNP PowerShell. Yeah, why not use the graph commandlets? Yeah.
And obviously, if you think about the graph commandlets, since they're auto-generated from the graph APIs, there's a coverage of the graph APIs, which is really great. But then at the same time, like just reiterating what we were saying, the challenge is really that they're kind of operational based, not a fulfilling scenario based. And again, there's a constant dialogue which we're having with the BMP team and the community together with Graph on trying to figure out what is the future.
There's another thing maybe that Graph is typically something that developers work with, and not necessarily administrators. Whereas PMP PowerShell is, I would say, mainly, I'm not saying that, hey, you're a developer, don't touch it, because that's not the case, but it's mainly focusing on administrative tasks and people that have no understanding of the under, and should not necessarily have an understanding or don't want to have an understanding over the underlying APIs.
Yeah.
So what's happening behind the scenes? They don't care, and they should not care. But the command list take care of that. Yeah. So that's I think a very fundamental approach in how we do PMP PowerShell.
Now related on the PMP PowerShell, I'm asking questions partly for myself as well, but typical questions what people always have on these. So the PMP PowerShell is community hosted, community created. So well, what's the supportability story and how does this then reflect versus
Dear Vesa.
The
Did you include the slide with your email address?
No, don't send us email. And by the way, Andrew, who's doing a video editing in this one, don't put my email on this video. I'm getting way too many one-to-one requests. Anyway,
I can already see slowly scrolling by now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
all 900.
Supportability story. Yeah. There is no official. If you call Microsoft support, you will get no reply. They will pick up the phone maybe, but they will not help you with PMP PowerShell because it is a community-based effort. So the only way to get support is by posting an issue on GitHub, on where we host our repository and where the open source code is located. And if you look in the repository, you might see a lot of issues there. And that's, I'm sorry, but I cannot answer them on my own. And it's impossible.
Dear Irvin.
It's becoming a Dear Irvin. And that's basically not working. I do have a life. And I like to live that life at times. And it basically, otherwise, I would be here sitting here 24/7 behind my computer and helping people.
You're not.
No. So post an issue there. And what I really hope is that the community, because there's a lot of competence out there, a lot of knowledge out there, also steps in. Because someone posts it to the repo doesn't mean that you cannot reply. If you know the answer, please reply. Please help people. It's the community. It's not like it's on the GitHub repository. The team will take care of it. Now we try, but we can't. It's too much. Now, what's very important to point out is that we relatively recently, a couple of months ago, introduced a discussion forum. A lot of the issues that were posted on the repository were effectively questions, not necessarily issues. Post them in the discussion forum. There's a discussion selection in the GitHub repo. Go there and post there your question. When you create a new issue, we will ask you also what it is. Is it a bug, is it a feature, or do you have a question? Then go to the discussion.
Yeah.
That is the place to actually post your questions instead of making it an issue.
And kind of related on the supportability story, obviously, as well, that everything what PMP hits behind the scenes is a public API. So those APIs are supported.
Magic hidden access behind the scenes to back doors or front doors.
Which seems to be that some people think that we do, which is strange.
No, we don't. We really don't. We use every only public APIs. Yeah.
Only supported APIs, which would be supported anyway to hit using code. So
the only thing we do maybe is that we have somewhat maybe more insight on how some of the things work. So we have an understanding of how to use those APIs to do things.
Yeah.
And that makes actually the PMP code a really great source of learning tips and tricks. Have a look out there. How are they doing things? Go to the open source repos of the framework, of the CLI, and figure out how things are working behind the scenes.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, I want to ask a thing, changing gears a little. Like, if you look at where you came from with PowerShell and where you're like, what is your ambition? Like, what would you like to achieve in the end with it?
Whoa. that's like, is this a job interview? Or
yes, yes, it is.
Where do you be in 5 years? Too much of the employees nowadays in this site, so that's a good sign.
No, take over the world. That was a plan first.
Kind of, sort of.
Been there, done that. Now let's go to the moon or Mars. No, I don't know. There are some things that, like for instance, take the SPL management shell. There is still, we have basically two PowerShell libraries. We have the PnP PowerShell and we have the SPL management shell effectively that does things specifically for SharePoint. I'm not talking about all the other commandlet modules available for Teams and Graph and kind of stuff, but just purely focusing on SharePoint. It's the SPL management shell and PnP PowerShell. In my world, it makes a lot of sense to merge those. They're still a bit confusing for maybe for people to like which one to use. And the SPL management shell is purely tenant administration tasks, and PnP PowerShell is both effectively. Now you'll notice that in the latest releases of PnP PowerShell, we have quite some coverage already for the commandlets that are in the SPL management shell. We're not 100% complete, but we're like at 90%, I would say. So most of the tasks that you can do with that one can be done also with PnP PowerShell, because the SPL management shell behind the scenes also uses public APIs.
Yep.
Effectively. There's nothing magic behind the SPL management shell compared to PnP PowerShell. So we have coverage, but I would like to, like, maybe in an ideal world, to have those nicely merged into one module.
Getting clarity on the consumer side of the things absolutely makes sense as well. So. Absolutely. Now, we kind of went through what you're doing and the PnP PowerShell story. Obviously, we're going to talk about slightly on the PowerShell story in the articles as well. But can you briefly explain what's the new direction with PnP PowerShell? There's two different libraries, and then is it already now supporting the latest greatest .NET standard core, whatever thing is?
So. Quite some years ago already, actually, 2 or 3 years ago, it was on the MVP Summit, I demoed a very early release of PowerShell running on a Mac to the shock of many people, of PnP PowerShell on a Mac, not PowerShell. PowerShell was available already for Mac. That now is the future. I'm not saying that Mac is the future, but multi-platform PnP PowerShell. So we run now with the current version, the current not yet released, but very close to be released. It could be as early as today. I'm not promising anything, but very early soon. Version runs on Windows, runs on Linux, runs on Mac. Runs actually on a Raspberry Pi, runs in Azure Functions, Azure Automation, basically wherever you want to run it. And that's because it's based on PowerShell Core or PowerShell 7. Now, you don't have to go out and install PowerShell 7 now in order to use the new PowerShell, PnP PowerShell, because it actually is also compiled for PowerShell 5, the Windows PowerShell, the one with the blue background. So we just still support that one, fully 100% functional. There's no limitations. But if you want to move up to the new PowerShell, to PowerShell 7, we support it fully. And so that's where we're going, multi-platform, cross-platform. Everywhere, basically, where you can run PowerShell, you can run PnP PowerShell.
Yeah. And today is Monday. You were saying that maybe on Monday today, on 17th, is it 17th, 18th? I don't
18th,
know.
Yeah,
18th
yeah.
of January.
Maybe, I'm not promising.
Or maybe
promising,
tomorrow, 19th. And obviously, depending on when you're watching this video, this might be 2 years after you're watching the video.
Exactly. So. It might have, yeah.
Or but listening to the podcast. So
we will release a 1.0. So we changed the name of the module. It went from SharePoint PnP PowerShell Online to more reflecting the fact that we're more generic now. It's now called PnP.PowerShell. You can already install it today. We changed a lot of things behind the scenes. So we now have like nightly builds. Every night if there is a change, we release a new nightly build. Only if there's a change. So that's really nice. You can always have the latest in the greatest. You don't have to wait a month. So for instance, if you have an issue and we tell you it's been fixed, it's going to be there the next day. So that's actually really, really nice. We're really happy with that. And then we will at certain intervals, release new major versions. And if that's going to be monthly or more often or less often, that depends on basically what is happening in the library.
Cool. And with a major, do you mean a major as the amount of stuff that is included, or a major that it might not be backwards compatible?
Right. No. Okay. Sorry. Even a minor release. So basically, we use semantic versioning. So the instead of the foreign version numbers that you this traditional .NET versioning that you saw in the previous versions of PowerShell 3.28, 12.0, 12.20, whatever .1 or 0. We go for 1.00. That will be the first major release, and then it will be 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. So major releases, so not minor, but major releases can potentially be breaking. Minors will not be breaking. And then the nightly builds, that is the last, that is the patch, I think it's called patch in semantic versioning. They are just nightly builds. So major ones, now, they will not come out too often.
I think this is a good time of doing some articles. Let's jump on the articles and then let's come back on a discussion on your learnings and how to get involved in the PMB PowerShell. But let's do that actually in the after the articles. So let me share my screen and share screen number two. That went correctly. Woohoo! I was able to invisible. Choose the right screen. Woohoo! What?
I can see it. It's visible.
You can see it. That's good. I can see it as well, Bob.
Yep, same here.
Just kidding.
Of course you can see it because it's your own screen.
Okay. Anyway, so a few articles from past week. It's actually, surprisingly, it was slightly slower week last week. To be fair, I'm expecting this ongoing week to be even slower because there's going to be a social media halt and all of that because of the, inauguration. Is it
in the US? Yeah.
In US and all of that. So anyway, but for the past week, approvals in Microsoft Teams now generally available. So basically approval processes, management of those things. That's really cool in the Teams side. And you can actually automate, and there's a Power Automate connections, and you can use those there as well. So it's really cool. There was a nice blog post also in the Teams blog related on 8 new productivity hacks for frontline workers, managers, and IT. And these are always nice. So basically, just recapping the features and capabilities. And we do a quite decent work related on keyboard animations and automations and explanation of things. So SMS sign-in mentions in Shift Group and a lot of this stuff. So really, really cool stuff for showing the power of the Microsoft Teams in a frontline worker scenario. On the Microsoft Graph, there was a new article, Microsoft Graph Mailback, taking advantage of MGD Get component in Microsoft Graph Toolkit. From I think it's Sebastian who wrote this one, or at least his name is in here. And basically just explaining how to take advantage of it, how to hit things. The Get, MGD Get, is quite actually powerful. It's basically automating the Get calls against Microsoft Graph, and then again, you get a response back, and then you're able to output the stuff in the memory, which is pretty cool. Making it super easy to use the Microsoft Graph in general. And obviously, just a note related on the person guard. This is absolutely number one control in the Microsoft Graph toolkit right now in the version 2.0, because this basically is the same card as what we use natively within the product. So it has the same look and feel and same features, pretty much. So really, really cool stuff. PMP PowerShell. So just noting on the location. So this is the new PowerShell, right, Irvin? And basically, this is the super complicated graph of explaining where we are and where we're heading. And
you think it's complicated?
There's arrows. There's arrows.
So you start at the top, and then you just follow the arrows.
Yes. Any change is always complicated. But basically, what's happening is that we used to have one, which was for SharePoint Online, and 2013, 2016, 2019. And then that's being now forked to its own. Well, that's being left to its own instance. And that's going to be using .NET 4.6 and all of that stuff. And then we will have a specific one for SharePoint Online. Why did we end up doing a specific one for SharePoint Online? Just to recap the decision. Why was this done?
Why we split it up, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, so, right. Maintenance of the code of the various versions, there were all kinds of exceptions that you had to take, like, oh, are you on 2013? Then we had to do things like this. Oh, were you on 2016? Then we had to do things like that. That was all embedded in the same code with basically if then else statements.
Yeah.
And that became an incredibly complex to maintain.
Yeah.
And the fact also that, we're getting all a bit older. Do we all still remember how things were working in 2013? Especially when you live online all the time.
Yes.
It's like, oh, how was it again?
8 years old. Or 9 years old.
Exactly. So we decided to, like, okay, you know what? We're going to take the existing code base, move it to a new repository, and get rid of all the on-prem code. Just took it away. We have done a lot of other refactoring behind the scenes in the new version, but that's the reason we split it up effectively.
Yeah. So, and
So on the screen you mentioned PnP PowerShell v4, PnP PowerShell vNext. How does it compare to the PnP PowerShell v1, which you mentioned earlier?
That is the result of this. We have to update this one, but it was called v4 when we made this slide. It's actually going to be v1. Confusing, I know. Yeah, we have to update this one. But the V3 version, that is the old legacy version.
PowerShell, SBO, PnP PowerShell.
Yeah.
SharePoint PowerShell. Yeah.
Exactly. That one will be now archived and put in read-only mode. We're not taking it away. Source code will be out there. We also
is going to be in the PowerShell gallery. Yeah.
It will be in the PowerShell gallery for like, I don't know how long. We have no plans to take it away, so you can still install it. But then the new PowerShell, which is mentioned here as v4, will be actually v1.
Yeah.
That was a decision we made a bit later that we're going to call it v1.
Also related on the fact that the CSAM for .NET Standard is only available for SharePoint Online, so not for on-premises.
Correct.
At least for now. It might be for 2020, whatever it will be, the on-premises, next on-premises version for SharePoint, which was announced actually in Ignite. Well, at least in one blog post, it was said that that's going to be out. Potentially, there might be a .NET Standard version for CSAM for it, but again, most likely not. So, realities of, let's say, engineering economics, or what would be the right way of actually defining that? Engineering economics. That's actually really good. I need to remember that. writing it down. Cool. Anyway, there's a good set of documentation, and from here you can get back to the GitHub, and then in the GitHub there's a issue list and discussions and all of that stuff, so people can actually have a active discussion, and then not that many actual issues right now, so which is really cool.
Yep.
Now, on this week, there's also the Microsoft 365 Friday, California 2021, which is, if we go in here, and if we go in sessions, it's a virtual conference, obviously, and there we go. A lot of sessions from the different speakers across the world, from US-based, Canadian-based, French, Germany, and so on. And I think this is a nice way of providing, well, reach, and without the need for people to fly over to actually deliver things. And anybody can access these sessions, which is always great. And a lot of different sessions, different focus points. Joel, I think Joel is one of the organizers of this one as well. So a lot of actually sessions. Do we have an agenda? Just out of curiosity, how many tracks? There we go. Loading. Wow. So that's 8 tracks. That's a lot. That is a lot. So,
but I mean, it only proves the point, right? That M365 now is really broad, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. All because things change all the time. New things are being introduced every week.
Yep.
So there's like this continuous stream to talk about what's new, but also like share the lessons learned about how to make the best use of all of this.
Absolutely. It is a super broad platform, and I like the fact that there's two tracks which are Spanish. So
yes, that is really great.
Inclusive and for that particular audience as well.
I'm a big Trekkie. Sorry to share that information. I see there's a session Star Trek: The Next Generation in the developer track. A bit lower there.
Oh yeah, The Next Generation of web parts.
Okay.
Yeah, you needed to have a look on the session, but looks really, really good. And I think all of this is going to be recorded and will be put available somewhere sooner or later. So there's going to be somebody's going to really produce a big setup this Friday. So a lot of cool stuff. So please have a look on that. Now, some articles which were hashtagged with a PMP Weekly. So Shao Ferreira, see, I'm almost getting it. Pronunciation finally after all of these years.
Yeah, it took only 2 years. Huh? Doesn't matter. Yes.
You learn it, as long as you learn eventually, it's progress. How to define a modern calendar view as a default view. So basically, you can define the modern calendar view, which is modern calendar view for SharePoint lists or SharePoint calendar. So basically, having a look on a proper polished experience, a lot of this stuff is in the process of getting automated and more better settings and more easily available in the UX as well.
And here you see another, you asked me what is the reason to use PMP PowerShell. He's using PMP PowerShell to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of, and that's the beauty of PMP PowerShell, because it's actually, you can do site level operations to automate things. So you can easily do this kind of settings in site collection or in a site level. So really cool. Now, the next one is from Gary Twinder. Export all of your Power Automate flows using CLI for Microsoft 365. Relatively new operation, and new operation in CLI, unless I'm completely mistaken. And this is basically just a reference.
It is. Okay, though.
Fine.
No. So actually, we had it for a while already.
Okay.
And it's just in our use case, like, if you want to have a copy of your flows, or if you want to move all of them to a different environment, if you want to document them, archive them, do whatever, because like if people change that, there's no way to go back because they are not versioned, right? Yep. So if you want to have backup or a copy or archive, this is a great way to just go through all your environments, or this is only doing one environment, I think, but you could also do it in a way that you get all environments and for all of them, get all your flows and copy them and archive them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm making a mental note now to get flow support in PMP PowerShell. And I will copy with pride from the approaches of the CLI.
Yep. Which actually is a good discussion point as well. So why do we have Microsoft CLI for Microsoft 365 and PMP PowerShell and all of this stuff? It's a classic question what some of the community people are keep on asking. So can we get a clarity, the definite answer now from you guys?
I mean, definitely, I don't think there is one, right? So way back when we would start working on CLI, there was no PowerShell, or PowerShell would work only on Windows.
Yes.
So there was no other way for us to run outside of Windows, and that was the original goal of CLI, to be able to work everywhere, right? Yep. So at some point, when the time came, PowerShell became available everywhere.
Yep.
Surprisingly, CLI is being used the most on Windows, on which you have PowerShell already for a year. So there's also like interesting thing, like why people
do that. I think it's a matter of a preference. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And I guess it's the same way. We see you have Azure CLI, Azure PowerShell. So it's... Yep. Like some folks are more used to grammars like you have in Git CLI, NPM CLI, Azure. So they're more thinking about CLI, like, and then there are folks who swear by PowerShell. So I guess it's not about, like, it's not either or. I think there's room for all of them. And at the end of the day, it's just a matter of like, which preference do you have? What do you like to use more?
Absolutely.
If you're an administrator, if you say you're not a developer, you might have to venture off in areas that are sort of unfamiliar for you if you install a CLI. Whereas if you're a developer, you already run environments like that. You have Node.js installed and all those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're ready to use it basically from within a minute.
Yep.
Whereas PowerShell is more maybe more into the administration side of the spectrum, more established.
Makes perfect sense. Cool. Then we had a personalization with audience targeting from Emily Mancini. And this is basically just clarification on how to create better user experiences for your intranet through the personalization and audience targeting, and great video actually walking through the different options and demonstrating what can be actually done. Probably you can't hear the audio. I'm the only one who can hear the audio in this case, but basically walking through the UX level.
Such a good audio.
UX level settings. Thank you. Now, then flow missing export and logic app used the CLI for Microsoft 365. So this is from Abby.
Abby Johnscott.
Yep. And who's working on the CLI as well. So really explaining how to export exactly the same comment, funny enough, on the same week, both guys. We're working in the CLI are talking about the same thing. So
yeah, and that was a coincidence. Apparently for some flows, the option to export them was not available in UI, right? So that gave you a fallback option to export these flows still.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then we had a Marcus Müller's blog post, use Microsoft Graph to query SharePoint items, and kind of a summary on things and learnings and how to get the SharePoint list items and what's possible and what's being supported. A really good set of functionalities, and also calling out what works and what doesn't actually work. So because the SharePoint, as an example, the SharePoint columns, there's so many columns and different lookup types and different options and all of that. And what of those actually works is a good thing to do. Managed metadata is a good example of a really complex data structure on a column level. But really nice blog post on the summary on all things. Why I stopped using SharePoint Framework Property Pane from Alex Terentiev. So matter of a preference again. Alex has a nice blog post explaining why he actually chose to use in his web parts and his company and Creative Web Parts, they're actually using an edit experience in the web part side rather than in the web property pane, which actually some of the first party web parts are also using. So whenever you go to the edit mode, you can do modifications over there or you can do it in a property pane. And his kind of story on that one. Then two YouTube videos. This is from Tom Morgan, building applications around Microsoft Teams. Good intro related on all of the different options which are being supported in the Microsoft 365 platform. So walking through the different options and APIs and stories related on that one. So really cool setup as well. And then Paolo had a programmatically registered AAAD app with delegated permission grants. That's sort of buzzwords. So how many people actually understand what this actually means? I guess they
two out of three. Two out of three.
I'm a program manager. I don't need to understand this. No, just kidding.
You need to have people who understand, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now,
so I wonder what SDK does he use for this?
Let's see.
Does he use Graph? Using Microsoft Graph. There you go.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yes. And then a good release from the PMP.js side of the house, a big release on the PMP.js 2.1, a lot of new functionalities from Alex Koltev and Julie and Patrick apparently was there as well. Ramin Dar has been contributing on this as well. And the latest notes are available in here in the change logs. So relatively big changes on things. And PMP.js is nowadays it's closing into the PMP PowerShell usage, right? On a monthly basis. So
yeah.
Or did it actually bypass that already? But it's really
quite good. I think it did.
Yeah.
Could be.
But also the interesting thing is like use case behind the two is different. Like PMP.js is something that you will use on runtime basically as an SDK that runs all the time in background. True. Whereas a PowerShell is, I mean, sure, you can have a daemon process that runs, let's say, every night or every day or on schedule, but it's different in use case. So it's in a way like, yes, you can compare the usage, but it's different. So
absolutely. I was just almost messing with Irvin because it's the classic internal discussion on who's using what and where and and how much. So, but game of numbers, absolutely. It's the lies, damn lies statistics, right? But I wanted to actually ask Irvin two things from you related on this thing. So, obviously, you've been around in the tech industry for a long time, but what would be?
It always comes down to an age, like that. That's not funny, Vesa. That is not a nice joke to make.
Yeah, I know. I'll just but what I wanted to do. For the new people who are watching this and are maybe planning to start building their open source efforts or planning to consider getting involved in the community, what would be your kind of a tips for getting involved or building success like BMP PowerShell? Was it an immediate success? And
no. No, it was part luck, I would say. BMP PowerShell became so it filled a gap. Right.
You find what are you doing?
Exactly. This is sort of how I met him the first time, by the way, in 2012. He did a similar thing, disappearing behind the desk.
Oh, that's actually a good point. Yes, I did.
Yeah. It's part luck. I managed to find a gap with PMP PowerShell, something that wasn't out there. Now, that is becoming more and more. If you want to build your own library and be successful, that's going to be more and more complex today because finding that gap is close to impossible. I think everything has been done or is already being worked on.
Or maybe everybody thought 10 years ago that everything is already being done. So,
well, but I mean, again, like, look at, we have Teams, there is Zoom, there is Skype, there are, like, just the fact that something is available already doesn't mean that it's done, that there is
no, fair enough. Fair enough. And now I'm talking about finding the overall project. If you want to work on something completely new, something you come up with yourself, if you want to get involved in an existing project, just do it. I think a lot of people are, and you know, I was one there too. When I started to go open source with PMP PowerShell, I was like, oh, what do people think of my code?
Yeah.
Will they question my code?
Of course they will.
Yeah, there are always people out there that will question your code, but that doesn't make it bad code. This code is like, it's so personal. It's almost like, well, is it art? Yeah, in a way. It's everyone has their own approach to it, and one approach doesn't make it worse than the other. And that, so I guess try to step over that threshold there, that like people, you don't have to be afraid of sharing your code. It doesn't give you an insight in your personality, really. It doesn't. And yeah, well, that's what people are afraid of, and I understand that. As I said, I've been there myself. So share your code, open it up. You will get the majority of the response you will get will be positive, and that is extremely giving. It returns a lot. It makes you, at least it makes me, very proud to see people being happy with the PMP PowerShell. And just share, step in, do it. Just do it. Can be very small.
What is the one thing that over the course of all your years with PMP you learn from doing open source?
We didn't ask this question before the call, so we're putting you on a spot. But
hey. Yeah, that's wow, like zero preparation time.
One thing or two things.
Off the top of your head. I mean, it doesn't need to be, dogma truth, but
the first thing comes up. There is no one truth to a problem. There is always different ways of solving things. And while you think that you're doing the most common way of solving it, there's always a completely different approach that actually is better. And when it comes to another thing, I think I realized is that it is of crucial importance to write readable code. We as repository maintainers need to be able to understand what you're doing. And it's very tempting to do all kinds of wonderful tricks in your code and maybe make everything in one line with, like, I don't know what kind of tricks you're using there, embedded link queries that are embedded in link queries that are embedded in link queries, but it doesn't make your code more readable. Basically, the result is that we have, like, you look at the repos, the pull request or the change, you're like, yeah, next week Friday, maybe I have time. And then it's that Friday, and you're like, maybe Monday. If I'm lucky. So write readable code, make it understandable and explain what you're doing. That helps a lot because you're not writing the code just for you. You're writing it for the whole community. Everyone has to learn from it. That's the idea behind it. Always write your code as if your colleagues should be able to maintain it.
That's actually a really good instruction. Absolutely. Because that applies to everything. In the development world, it's not about making your code fancy. It's all about making other people to understand your code.
Yeah, dumb it down, I would say. The fact that you understand it doesn't mean that someone else understands it. Yeah. And dumb it down.
Yeah,
make it as simple as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a Do we want to deep dive on anything else, Waldeck?
Or we can close on time for one.
For once, in less than 1 hour. No, I think it's actually good. That was really good, and a really good closing on the things as well. So we'll add, obviously, links to the BMP PowerShell from the video notes or podcast notes. People can actually access them. I think that's it. Thank you, Irvin, for joining us this week. We'll be back with a new BMP Weekly within a week. And please remember to use hashtag BMP Weekly so we know what people are writing. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.